Is your underwear in need of a refresh? Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women, queer-founded and queer-run. Tomboy X designs sustainable, gender-inclusive underwear and apparel in sizes 3 extra small to 6 extra large. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at TomboyX.com. Shop now on TomboyX.com.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
Oh, God is dead and the woke left have killed him. Welcome to It Could Happen Here, the podcast where we celebrate the destruction of Jair Bolsonaro and the concept of Christianity and the human soul, both of which happened recently in Brazil, as far as I understand from skimming the news on Twitter. How's everybody else doing today?
Utterly exhausted, but you know, such is the world without Christ.
We have destroyed.
Yeah,
that's what the woke mob did. Speaking of woke mobs, what are we doing today? What are we talking about?
We are talking more about the Brazilian elections. I guess we should start with our perennial update about what seems to be happening there right now. So, okay, currently it is, 11 a.m. Pacific time. We're recording this on...
Tuesday, about right. Yeah.
Yeah, that one. So, as of right now, Bolsonaro, still... So, he's appeared, but he still hasn't conceded the election.
He sure hasn't.
Yeah, and... Okay, so the other thing that's been going on is that there's been... Okay, so one of the sort of perennial Bolsonaro things is that he has a bunch of support among a bunch of sort of like a bunch of different sort of like kinds of truckers. And
yes.
There's been a bunch of... His supporters have been setting up a bunch of barricades. Okay, from talking to people on the ground and from what I've seen from it, I don't know. It's hard to gauge how serious these blockades actually are.
Some of these blockades, I've seen videos of some that involve several dozen vehicles.
Yeah, I mean they have a lot of vehicles. The Supreme Court has ordered the police to clear the barricades.
Yes.
And as best I can tell, they're kind of just getting their asses kicked. They're not really resisting particularly hard, and so I don't know if this is
it's the kind of thing that it will present perhaps a model for other people in the future if there's any efficacy to it. It certainly could be part of an effective coup, locking down the roads in this way.
Yeah, I mean, this is how the coup against Allende started, for example.
If Bolsonaro and the military don't both go in 100% right now, basically, then what these Trekkers are doing will not be much more than like an annoyance. You know, it's the same thing as with January 6th. If Trump, when they breached the Capitol, if Trump had declared, "I'm remaining president, everybody rise up," well, then a whole thing might have happened. But he didn't. And so the momentum that might have kind of led into a more thorough takeover of the government fizzled out with a bunch of guys getting, you know, into fist fights with the Capitol police and shit.
Yeah. And there's an aspect I think, too, that's sort of important of like, so these are like Bolsonaro, like this whole sort of like truckers blockade thing. Like, this has been going on in various forms for like the entire time he's been in office. And like he sort of turned them into these motorcades that he would do. But they're really weird in that, like, OK, so like they are blocking roads, but a lot of it is kind of pure spectacle. Like there's this whole wave of sort of right wing candidates there's a whole wing of sort of like right wing politicians who like got their start from like doing Instagram videos from like, or like TikToks or like shit, like whatever, like,
yeah,
basically like from these blockades. So like, I don't know, they don't seem to be like, as of right now, I don't think they're like an incredibly serious fighting force, but you know, I mean, it's not good this is happening. It's also not good that the police was like initially cooperating with them and that the police set up their own roadblocks to stop people from voting. So I don't know, the situation is not good, but it's not as bad as it could be. And yeah, and I want to reiterate that like the U.S. has recognized that Lula has won the election, which I think makes it like infinitely harder.
Yes, the fact that, and this is one of those things when people on the left talk about like, is there a harm reduction point in voting? Well, this is harm reduction, right? Because if Trump had been in office, he would have backed Bolsonaro and Lula would be in prison again. And there would be absolutely no hope for stemming the destruction of the rainforest. Not that things are going to work.
I could
still be a nightmare in Brazil. Yeah. Don't get me wrong, but we've at least avoided the most obvious way things could have been a disaster.
Yeah. Although I do want to point out that the Obama administration had a huge role in like this entire shit. I mean, to be fair, the Obama administration, I don't think, was trying to put Bolsonaro in power. They were trying to put the neoliberal ghouls in power. But they definitely, well, we'll get into that next episode, but they definitely like helped get us here.
No, I mean, that's true. Like, and it also follows in the continually building story that like Biden's actually a much better president than Barack Obama.
Yeah, low bar, but
I mean, incredibly low bar, because Barack Obama led directly to Donald Trump for a variety of reasons.
Yeah.
But like, there you are.
this is a weird world that we live in.
Yeah. And it's also like people are now starting, you know, rightfully so. I know we're going to be talking about a bunch of fucked up stuff about Lula. Most recently kind of bringing up his very bad takes on Ukraine. But it's also like, I don't care. Like, obviously, I think I would always like for people to have, if they're going to have a representative democracy, better leaders. But at the end of the day, like the rainforest being destroyed at the rate it's being destroyed is an existential threat to all life on Earth. And Lula has a proven track record of reducing deforestation in the Amazon.
Well,
so
yeah,
like what I don't care that he has a bad take on you. I just don't like it. It doesn't matter, really.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw articles that were like, Lula like supports democracy in Brazil, but supports authoritarianism abroad. It's like, guys, shut up. Like, holy shit. Jesus Christ. Like if I go back to 2017, I can find all of you like writing fucking pro Bolsonaro articles. So like, shut up. So, OK, so let's get to how everything went to shit. So last episode, we sort of left the PT like riding high. Lula's out with like a 80-90% approval rating. He's done like an economic miracle. He's pulled one people out of poverty. And, you know, if things had continued like that, we wouldn't be here right now. So obviously something happened. And
yes.
To understand what happened, unfortunately, we have to do some materialism. Okay, so bear with me through the materialism. I promise we're going to get to a bunch of, like, absolutely horrific crimes against humanity. But first, we need to do a bit of materialism.
I love crimes against humanity.
Yeah, there are lots of criming. Oh boy.
I'm already hard. Wait. Maybe I shouldn't have said it that way.
Moving swiftly on. So, okay. I'm gonna quote here from one of the sort of more famous Marx quotes from 18th Brumaire. That is genuinely a very good way of understanding history, which is, men make their own history, but they do not make it as they please. They do not make it under self-selective circumstances, but under circumstances are existing already, given and transmitted from the past. So, okay, what are the circumstances that, like, 2002 Lula is inheriting? Lula's sort of social democratic plan is able to sort of grow the economy and also pay off the ruling class to be able to stay in power at the same time because of something called the commodity boom. A commodity boom broadly is just like, it's a large spike across the board in the prices of commodities over a sort of period of time. We're using the sort of like mainstream bourgeois definition of a commodity, which is like primary commodities. It's stuff you can like pick up off the ground, dig up or harvest. So it's things like soybeans, like copper, iron,
yeah. Horses, lead, condoms. Yes, we understand what commodities are.
Yes. Look, Brazil condom tree. I don't know. I got nothing. So, OK. And Lula like takes office and leaves power like almost exactly perfectly to take advantage of like the peak of the commodity boom. Right. Lula comes into power in 2000. So he wins 2002 election. He takes office 2003. The commodity boom, according to Cambridge's A Handbook of Primary Commodities in the Global Economy, took off in 2004 and ended in about 2014, but it's slowing by about 2010, 2011-ish. And Lula exits office in 2010 due to the two-term limit, which means he never has to deal with the consequences of the downturn.
And let's stop here for a second. How do term limits work in the Brazilian system? Because it's not the same as here. Here, like, a term limit means you get your two as president and then you're done.
Yeah, so I the way I think it works, and I could be wrong about this, but I'm 90% sure the way it works. Okay, so you can have two terms, and then you can't run again in a row. But if like someone else comes in, you can then run again after that. It's just that you can only do two in a row.
I mean, I'm happy that he's beaten Bolsonaro, but that is a very silly way to do it.
Yeah, well, and I will say something about this is something about Lula that like. I think kind of infuriates a lot of the people who like don't like him politically and want to sort of scream about his authoritarianism or whatever. Like he was always like mostly really scrupulous about the sort of like democratic norm stuff. Like a lot of other sort of like pink tide leaders in the same position. Like this is actually how Evo Morales originally gets in trouble is that he tries to seek a third term and Lula is just like, not, I'm out. I'm fuck it. Like,
which is good. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of like on the one hand. In theoretical terms, this is sort of like good for Brazilian democracy, et cetera, et cetera. In practical terms, it's kind of a disaster. Because
I mean, it's good because I think that it's always good when popular leaders acknowledge like absolute limits. But yeah. I mean, the timing wasn't ideal.
Yeah. And. You know, but you know, okay. So like, the reason that he's able to sort of like, you know, I'm like, if the Constitution had allowed him to run for a third term, he would have just like he would have clobbered everyone. There's just not even like any remote competition to him. And the reason he's able to do this again is because
people like this
boom,
guy.
he got like 10% less of the vote this time.
I mean, yeah, but what was that? Yeah, okay.
Like this election was like really close compared
no,
to
no,
like,
no.
The
oh,
last
you're talking about this most recent one.
Most
yes.
recent
I'm
one.
Talk,
yeah,
I'm
yeah,
talking
that
about
really
Lula
close.
Back then. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Lula back then, like literally unstoppable political
He's
juggernaut.
Very, very popular at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, but this is because of the commodity boom. And we need to, in order to understand what is going to happen to the PT, we need to understand why the commodity boom happened in the first place. This turns out to be very important. There's a lot of causes technically that have to do with a lot of complicated macroeconomic stuff. The single most important cause for us, and I think generally the one that is like is credited with the reason that these commodity prices are increasing, is the skyrocketing growth of the Chinese economy in the 2000s. And I mean, when I say skyrocketing growth, like we are talking like double digit GDP increases every year. Mm-hmm.
This is like when we have that Olympics where they have all the drummers and you have that Newsweek article about how scary China is. Maybe it's time. Yes.
And you know, and the sort of the massive increase in industrial production, like they are, the CCP is like, like China is industrializing on a scale that is, I think, like almost hitherto unimaginable. And this means, you know, there's an enormous increase in demand for primary commodities. But this boom was only sustainable as long as the Chinese economy can maintain something like double-digit GDP growth. But the problem is, after 2008, the Chinese economy starts to slow. And sort of in response to this, in 2009, the CCP does, like, one of the largest stimulus projects ever. And they spend 4 trillion RMB on, like, infrastructure and welfare programs to stave off a recession. And it works. But, you know, like, this is like the largest, like, stimulus program ever. And it can't really keep the economy growing. Like, ever since 2010, every single year, well, okay, excluding the weird rebound stuff in 2021, but, like every single year, like, year-on-year growth, the rate of growth of the Chinese economy has been decreasing.
Right.
And, okay, well, the commodity boom, you know, is produced by fueling, you know, by increased Chinese demand, but, okay, what happens when that, you know, isn't true? But you know, okay, so in the 2000s, like, this is great. These are the sort of material conditions that make Lula's, like, politics possible, right? You have enormous economic growth, and this economic growth is happening in sectors, like, in very important sectors of the Brazilian economy, to the extent that it's able to provide a stable revenue base for the state that allows it to fund welfare programs, like, and pay off the bourgeoisie, which is, you know, this is sort of like papering over this sort of, like, fundamental contradiction of the PT's base, right? Which is that they have to keep the economy running, so they have to pay off a bunch of sort of, like, incredibly corrupt dudes and also just sort of, like, Brazilian capitalists, and they also are trying to sort of do their welfare programs. But, you know, the commodity boom collapses. And suddenly there's only enough money to either pay the capitalists or pay the workers and not both. And the project begins to collapse. And this happens across Latin America. I would make the argument that, like, the end of the commodity boom, like, is the reaper that came for the Latin American left. It is at least as important, if not more so, in the collapse of the sort of the pink tide over the course of 2010s, like, than the actual CIA. Like, the CIA is very heavily involved in this, but the commodity boom just sort of, like, just nuking all of these economies, like, coming to an end. Just, like, that is an enormously important sort of, like element of this entire story. And there's another thing that we should note, which is that there's a problem with organizing your economy to be sort of, like, you know, in a way that's reliant on sort of, like, primary commodity, like, export production. A handbook of primary commodities in the global economy specifically notes, quote, Brazil's significance in coffee, cotton, iron ore, sugar, and tobacco, and Chile is a dominant exporter of coffee. So, okay, Brazil exports, like, 11% of the world's cotton, 20% of the world's iron ore, 15% of its coffee, 39% of its sugar, and 18% of its tobacco. And it also has an enormous cattle industry. It's got, like, a bunch of soybean farming, which is actually really important because it turns out as China gets richer,
it turns people into soy boys.
Yeah, it also makes soy sauce, which is important for.
I mean, more importantly, our reserves of beta cuck energy would be disastrously low if we didn't have Brazilian soy. So thank you, Jair Bolsonaro, for keeping the soy flowing.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is sort of like this is a joke, but, like, this is sort of the issue with this, right? Like, okay, so politically, this is a disaster. There's also a massive timber industry, which has been literally destroying the entire planet.
Yes.
But, like, okay, so, like, here's the thing. If you know anything about sugar, coffee, cotton, and tobacco, you know those are slavery crops. And, you know, like, these are, like, the primary exports of a plantation economy. And the people who run those kind of, like economies, the people who are, like, those plantation owners are, like, the scariest people who have ever lived anywhere, like, at any time on Earth. And, you know, in Brazil, these people have been in power for 500 years. And unfortunately, this is, like, a big part of what sort of Lula's economic miracle is resting on. This isn't really, like, a base that produces socialism. Like, if your economic base is relying on these, like, like unbelievably psychotic racist like planter oligarchs. Like your economic base is something that creates fascism. However, comma, Robert, do you know what else produces fascism?
The products and services that support this podcast.
Ding, 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 ding. That's some of them, I guess, good. Are fascism just directly.
So true. Well,
yeah. Yeah. The gold people probably would be the main example of this. But we also are sponsored by bigfascism.org.com. Ah, shit. I don't know. I don't just roll the fucking ads.
Waiting on a tax return? Hopefully it ends up in your hands. Fraudulent tax returns due to identity theft increased by 30% in 2023. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. LifeLock monitors and alerts you to identity threats you may miss on your own, even if you're careful with your personal information. And if you do become the victim of tax-related identity fraud, LifeLock has U.S.-based restoration specialists ready to help solve identity theft issues on your behalf. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Why wait for your tax refund in vain? Help protect your information immediately with LifeLock. Go to LifeLock.com/news and save up to 25% your first year. That's 25% off at LifeLock.com/news. Identity theft protection starts here.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer-founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Ah, we're back. Boy, that was a good ad pivot. I hope everybody's happy. Chris, why don't you continue talking about Lula?
Yeah, so speaking Lula, of fascism...
I was doing a...
Ah, yeah, Layla. I went into early there.
Not well.
No, this is going great.
It's hard to. We'll have Daniel fix that up in post.
Yeah. Okay, so speaking of creating fascism, yeah, let's talk about that time Lula invaded Haiti.
All right. To be fair, whomst among us hasn't invaded Haiti?
I've actually never invaded Haiti.
That's true. I've never invaded Haiti. However, the U.S. and Canada. Also,
okay,
and the UK.
Well, okay, oh well.
That is
right.
More what I
okay.
was saying.
Okay.
Like, it's... yeah. So in 2004, a CIA-backed coup ousted Haiti's democratically elected leftist president, Jean-Baptiste Aristide. And Initially, okay, so the initial sort of occupation force that's sent in by the UN is a U.S., is like an American, French, and Canadian force. And they're sent in, like, ostensibly under the sort of guise of, like, restoring stability or whatever.
Because when I think about who can make Haiti stable, it's France and the United States.
Yeah, you know.
Partners in nation stability.
And Canada.
And Canada now. I'm glad you guys are... You know, getting involved in your big brother's crimes against humanity.
Yeah.
I'm wondering for the Canadian stuff, how do they ship all of the Mounties all the way to Haiti?
Okay, so they took their horses
over the water, Garrison.
Yeah. We built the land bridge.
Yeah.
Allowed them to ride. You know, okay, so but the thing about this force, right, is that like, okay. So even to like the most casual observer, having literally France in the U.S. and also Canada, which is like the U.S., but there's also a French part of it, like literally
and they put weird fucking sausage soup on their goddamn French fries. Disgusting.
Yeah, it turns out. Okay, so like the optics of these people just militarily occupying Haiti is really bad. So, okay, the UN is trying to figure out, like, a permanent force. And initially, Lula, like, opposes Brazil getting involved in this, which is good. But
that would make sense. When I think about whether or not Brazil should be involved in places, Haiti would not be the top of my list. You know?
This is always just like a really sad thing of sort of like just like the history of Latin America, of like how many countries like owe their existence to Haiti over and over and over again, like sending them troops and ships and weapons. And then every single one of these countries are like, ah, fuck you, Haiti. So Lula, like, basically Lula becomes convinced that like this is like his big opportunity to like build the influence of Brazil on the international stage. And so Brazil just like takes over the occupation or the auspices of the United Nations Stabilization Mission in Haiti, which has the like utterly impronounceable acronym MINISTA or something. God damn it, guys, come on.
You know how to do an acronym. You have enough money. Jesus.
You would think, however, no, it's this bullshit. And okay, so apparently this is part of a plan to try to get U.S. and French support for a bid to get Brazil a permanent seat in the U.N. Security Council. If you Google who is currently on the U.N. Security Council, you will see how this went, which is to say it did not work. And shit starts going horrifically badly almost immediately. Basically, like at the outset of the occupation, Brazilian troops in Haiti launched an attack on a, quote, gang leader. And note, by the way, here, the terminology that is used to describe this operation and the people that they're fighting is exactly the same way as the paramilitary forces in Haiti are described like right now by the U.S. and the U.N. as the U.S. tries to stage another invasion, this time with the backing of Mexico's nominally leftist president AMLO. So, real sort of legacy of people who Americans think are leftists doing imperialism in Haiti. Good job, everyone.
Well, everybody does a little bit of imperialism in Haiti, treat.
I mean, this is the thing, right? Right. Every single country in Latin America is bound and determined to prove that you actually cannot do contrary to sort of popular opinion about this, you actually can't do social democracy without imperialism. And every single time someone tries to do a social democracy, they have to invade Haiti. It's just sort of like it's in the contract here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so the UN, the sort of like the, and by the way, I should point out the UN force is commanded by a Brazilian general, like the entire, basically once the Brazilians take over, it's commanded by Brazilian generals the entire time.
Guys seem nice.
Okay. So they go after this guy and they fire 22,000 rounds of ammunition into basically just like apartment buildings. To this day, nobody knows how many people they killed, but from eyewitness reports, we know they killed babies, they killed children, they killed pregnant women. It is Vietnam shit. It is absolutely awful. Augusto Helano, I don't know how to pronounce this guy's name. He's the guy who leads this operation, becomes the head of Bolsonaro's Institutional Security Bureau. Here's a headline from Podera 360 from last week. Quote, "It is not possible to admit the return of the Red Gang," says Hilano. And by the Red Gang, he means Lula. He's calling Lula a communist.
Okay.
And this is fine and good from a guy who, again, is the head of the Institutional Security Bureau. This guy, like, sucks so much. When he retired in 2011, Hilano defended, this is from Reuters, when he retired in 2011, Hilano defended Brazil's 1964 to 1985 military dictatorship as a bulwark against the communist, quote, the communization of the country.
Sure.
And, okay, so, like, we can say that as much as sort of Brazil's, like, fascism is homegrown, and this is absolutely true, they're also just, like, eating the ass end of Foucault's boomerang, because all of the fascism that they're about to do is exported to Haiti before it comes back. Here's some Reuters. This is talking about Bolsonaro's cabinet. His proposed defense minister, former General Fernando Alvarez y Silva, served under Hilano as an operations chief. Bolsonaro's incoming infrastructure minister, Tarcísio Freitas, was a senior UN military engineer in Haiti, arriving shortly after Hilano left in 2005. Retired General Carlos Alberto dos Santa Cruz, Brazil's next government minister, led UN troops in the Caribbean nation in 2007. All of those guys, by the way, this was written before the election. All of those guys took office. Fully two of Bolsonaro's secretaries of government were part of this occupation. So, yeah, this obviously went great for Lula. Like, yeah, okay, good job. You sent a bunch of colonial troops to occupy Haiti, and then all of the generals came home and were like, let's fucking do fascism here too. Yeah, so in this episode, we're talking a lot about sort of the Brazilian fascism, because, you know, this is a Brazil episode, but I don't want to minimize, like, what this did to Haiti, where, like, to this day, Lula is, like, fucking despised for, you know, like, betraying the Haitian people and fucking occupying the country with troops. Like, there's this whole thing where, like, Lula goes to Haiti and he has this whole thing about how, like, he's playing, like, a soccer match, and he's like, okay, we're going to show the world that there's an alternative to bullets. And meanwhile, this soccer stadium is literally surrounded by the Brazilian army, and it's, oh boy.
I love showing the world there is an alternative to bullets, and it's just threatening people with your guns because they know you've shot enough people that you'll use them if they,
oh, and drones too, by the way. This is where the UN learns how to do drone warfare. The other thing that's happening here is this occupation is where the UN starts to, like, fight, quote, like, hybrid wars for the first time. It, you know, the wars that they're doing, these sort of peacekeeping operations, quote unquote, they're starting to do counterinsurgency shit where, like, the enemy can be mixed in with the population, and, you know, they kill a shit ton of people. There is rampant rape and sexual assault, because it turns out that when you send troops to another country to occupy it, this is what happens. And when this force eventually pulls out in 2017, they just, like, leave a shit ton of fatherless babies behind, because the people who, you know, did all this shit were like, fuck it, we're just gonna leave. We're gonna, like, leave these children behind. I think most famously, okay, so there's a giant earthquake in Haiti in 2010, and this leads to this, like, enormous sort of redoubling of the occupation, and troops are brought in from other parts of the world, including there's a contingent from Nepal, and the result of this is that Nepalese
definitely
troops,
Haiti seems like a place Nepalese soldiers ought to be.
This is, by the way, like, this is like the new revolutionary government in Nepal that has, like, finally defeated the monarchy after, like, decades of struggle. It's like,
we all looked at the British Empire and were like, well, that's clearly fucked up. But what if we did it in a decentralized way? Right? Like, what if it wasn't just the British? What if everyone was sending Nepalese shock troops in to crack down on popular insurgencies?
Well, the thing that particularly goes wrong with the Nepalese troops is that the Nepalese troops bring cholera to Haiti. And
okay, well, again, who hasn't?
Here's the thing. The defeat of cholera, this is, like, one of the few genuine victories we have had over sort of, like, over the last 200 years, over the forces that have caused, like, human misery and suffering for, like, since time immemorial, is that we defeated cholera. And then we brought it back. The fucking UN occupation brings, like, this is the first large-scale cholera outbreak in modern times. 800,000 Haitians get cholera as a result of this.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah.
It's not hard to not spread cholera.
Yeah.
Even if you're looking by the standards of military occupations, like the Russians haven't spread cholera in Ukraine. It's not hard to not spread cholera.
We didn't spread cholera in Vietnam.
No, like, we didn't create a cholera epidemic in Afghanistan or Iraq. It is not hard to not create a cholera epidemic.
Yeah, to be fair, the Saudis have managed to create one in Yemen now too.
Yes.
But that's probably worse than this one. But
that just reinforces my point that most imperialist occupations are able to not cause cholera epidemics.
It's hard. And okay, you know, and obviously, right, like, okay, you've now created your colonial army. The colonial army is going to come home, and literally these same troops go back to Brazil and launch a war in the favelas. Under Dilma Rousseff's PT, like, the fucking army is literally occupying the favelas. And, you know, this is all part of the PT's, like, massive campaign to sort of buy weapons and modernize the army, which, you know, and buy... Like, I think currently they're involved in, like, well, okay, I'm not entirely sure about my dates on this. I'm not entirely sure if they're currently involved in 9 UN peacekeeping operations or 16, but there are Brazilian troops, like, all over the world, still doing this bullshit. And, you know, again, as we've talked about, like, literally the people who are in Haiti, like, are the people who are going to help put Lula in prison and put Bolsonaro in power. So, you know, this is some fucking enormous, like, creating your own gravedigger shit. Okay, we've now gotten through one of the sort of sets of gravediggers the PT is building for themselves. But also back in Brazil, things are also, like, you know, not going great for them, which the way that this is specifically not going great is that, like, even, you know, sort of in the hour of triumph of the Workers' Party, right, Lula, Ascendant, et cetera, there is a massive fissure opening under the feet of the Brazilian left. And that fissure is the gig economy. We have talked, like, literally ad nauseum on this show about how the gig economy is bad for workers. For our purposes, the thing that's kind of important here is that doing this kind of gig work, right, like becoming an independent contractor, it has a profound social and political effect, and it creates a sort of profound social political atomization, right? It breaks down the sort of social bonds that, like, built the workers who've been the PT and transform, and instead of the sort of, like, you know, massification, right, like the conversion of people into sort of like these like concrete mass social entities who can, like, take collective action, you get these neoliberal subjects who are incredibly atomized, incredibly isolated, and vulnerable to sort of, like, you know, fascist projects that promise, like, community and unity and, like, this new organic whole. And, you know, guess where Bolsonaro draws the support from? Oh, wait, it's a newly evangelical section of the working class. And to be clear here, the informal sector in Brazil has always been massive. But the way the PT runs their welfare programs makes everything just exponentially worse. We talked about this a bit last episode, but one of the big things the PT's welfare programs do is they're about giving people access to microcredit. And, okay, so in the short run, this is technically incredibly effective at combating poverty, but it had another effect, which was to sort of, like, deeply and firmly, like, sort of like ingrain vast sections of Brazilian workers into the banking system and turn them into micro-entrepreneurs. And, okay, so being a social democratic party and on purpose constructing an entire class of micro-entrepreneurs is, like, maybe the single best example of producing your own gravediggers that I've seen since, like, the military dictatorship cooperated with Lula in the first place. This is a terrible idea. But, you know, okay, so I think it's worth asking, like, why is the PT doing this shit, right? Like, this is something that is, like, otherwise absolutely incomprehensible. And the answer is that the PT was never quite the party that people think it is. Here is from a group of Brazilian anarchists writing in Crime Think. The rulers linked to the realization of mega events cheaply reap political rewards for FIFA and its corporate cronies, not coincidentally the same companies that financed the electoral campaigns of the PT. The benefits were financial.
profits stretched into the billions, underwritten by public resources and guaranteed by police repression. The PT could not have done this alone. It was the party that received the largest total of private donations in recent years, $75 million in 2013, while other parties like the PSDB, the Social Democratic Party, and PMDB, Party of Democratic Movement, the biggest and oldest party in Brazil, mostly center-right and conservative politicians, only managed $46 million altogether. In 2014, the year of Dilma Rousseff's re-election, the PT received $47 million from contractors facing lawsuits and investigations, while the PMDB got $38 million and the PSDB got $28 million. This demonstrates the symbiosis between the Workers' Party and those who control the flow of capital in the country, a connective tissue of economic and political power. So this is not good. You can sort of ask, what was the PT really doing here, right? Like, why are they doing microloans? Why are they taking all of this money? There's a really, really good pair of articles from a Brazilian group called Militants in the Fog that was published at Ill Will called Work and Revolt in Brazil's Dead Ends, and I'm going to read from some of it. A bank account, a smartphone with access to the internet, and a profile in an app. The means to collect emergency aid, which is emergency aid is part of this is talking about Bolsonaro stuff. So Bolsonaro implements this policy called emergency aid, which is like it's kind of the equivalent of like the US's like the stimulus checks that we got, but slightly different. But the means required to collect emergency aid are the same required to create an account for Uber, a sign that we are facing fundamental parts of this, quote, new way of working. Years ago, it was already possible to identify the Bolsa Familia program, which is that giant PT, like Workers' Party cash transfer program that we talked about last episode, whose dimensions were small in the face of the 2020 financial aid program. The objective of forming a unified workplace more deeply subjugated to capitalist relations. The, quote, bankification promoted by the program contributed to expanding the reach of microcredit systems, a process of financialization of informality, which was deepened in recent years with the dissemination of increasingly agile and easy payment terminals and electronic payment systems such as PIX, a quicker and tax-free money transfer method. The phenomenon reached unprecedented intensity due to the emergency aid. The state-owned bank Caixa Econômica Federal absorbed 30 million customers in 10 days in what was possibly the fastest bankification process in history, thus reaching a record profit in 2020. Access to credit is essential for the emergence of a precarious workforce to which capital costs and risks are transferred, while interest rates introduce a new level of productivity to the old. Okay, this is a Portuguese word that, oh boy. Via caro, which is like getting by, which is this sort of like, it's a sort of slang term for kind of like doing stuff in the informal economy to like survive. Yeah, which is now directly connected to global financial markets. Thus, the focus of these income policies would be less on expanding consumption capacity for the beneficiaries, as in the Keynesian distributive model, and more on expanding their investment capacity, financing the acquisition of work instruments and, quote, self-valuing their human capital. Enthusiasts of such programs claim that the financial cushion provided by basic income can represent enough stability for people to be able to spend their own savings or other capital starting a business. So, okay, what's happening here, and the Militants of Fog is arguing this after the work of a Brazilian academic named Ludmila Abilio, is, okay, what's happening here is the real subsumption of the formal economy, which, okay, so, like, what does that mean? We need to take a step back and do, like, a little bit more Marx. So Marx makes this distinction between what he calls formal and real subsumption. Subsumption is this like whole philosophy thing I'm not going to get into here, but basically what he's talking about is stuff getting like subsumed by capitalism, right? Like becoming a part of the sort of capitalist like process and system. And this comes in stages, right? The first is formal subsumption where, okay, so say you have a peasant, right? Formal subsumption is where the peasant like enters the market for the first time and suddenly instead of being a peasant is now like a wage worker, right? And, you know, in this phase, right, capitalism has entered a new sphere, right? Someone who was a peasant, who was, like, not doing capital stuff before, right, who was going for self-production and had, like, feudal dues and obligations, is now a wage worker. But, you know, and then they're selling the goods to the market, but the actual process of production, which is, like, okay, so, like,
how a peasant does, like how your former peasant new agricultural worker like grows their crops and what crops they grow and like when they decide to work. In this first stage, this is still the peasant's choice. That ends with real subsumption, where all control over the workplace that like workers had had is completely destroyed, and you're just, you know, okay, this is what like we think of as a regular job, right? We're like, okay, the way the job works is your boss tells you what to do. Your entire labor process has been like fully integrated into this sort of like broader capitalist production processes that you have no control over. And this is what's been happening in the informal economy over the past few decades in Brazil. It's a real subsumption, right? Like, and you know, what stuff that had formerly been, you know, like people taking wage labor, but the sort of structure of how people do the jobs that they're doing, right, was still up to them. This has been ending, and the way it's been ending is through basically the degree of control offered by to employers by apps like Uber the control that these apps give you over the informal economy. And the results have been absolutely catastrophic. On the one hand, the sort of limited autonomy that the formal economy, like that the informal economy used to give you, has been crushed by algorithmic control from gig economy apps that, you know, like track where you are and tell you where you need to go and how fast you have to get there and like what lights you have to run in order to get there. And also increasingly, these gig workers are being squeezed by a new level of middle management who work basically the same way as like gang, like the old gang bosses that controlled Chinese labor in the turn of the 20th century, where you have these guys who act as like private recruiting companies and foremen for workers who, okay, so you go to this place, right? These people are like, okay, I will give you a job, and they negotiate. They're the people who negotiate directly with the company and take money from the company and then use that money to sort of like pay the employer. And this, you know, this sucks, right? Because on the one hand, you have all of the bad parts of a regular job, which is there's a guy who tells you what to do, and if you don't do what he tells you, like, you get fired. And then you have all the bad parts of an informal sector job, which is that you don't have any of the legal protections that, like, workers with formal contracts have. And, you know, the effect of this has been to create super hell for, like, vast, vast swaths of the Brazilian working class. And this has been a just unbelievably catastrophic sort of disaster for Brazilian politics. But okay, you know what else is creating super hell for the Brazilian working class?
I mean, not the products and services that support this podcast.
Yeah, no, those ones just do it for the American working class.
Now, yeah, okay, here's fucking ads.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer-founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for
more info now.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
Oh, we're back. Wow. I, for one, think everything's going to be fine. The fact that Lula won this resounding victory over Jair Bolsonaro by nearly a whole percentage point is going to mean none of these problems that you're talking about are ever things again.
Yep. Nope. And you know, okay, so speaking of reasons why this will not be a problem again, the sort of like financialization bullshit, this doesn't just like stick in sort of labor process, like this stuff spreads to the like to the social movements as well, which are in a lot of cases like very old and powerful Brazilian social movements are reduced to these sort of like state-backed financialized husks of their former selves, where like, you know, you have social movements that are literally like issuing bonds to like fund their members' businesses. You have social movements that are like, okay, if you show up to assemblies, you can like earn points so that you can get access to like be put on a waiting list for like a government rent stabilized apartment or something. Like, it is a shit show. And this whole process sort of leads to the hollowing out of the Brazilian left. And, you know, and as the left is sort of like being sort of like torn apart from the inside out, and as you get into sort of like 2011, 2012, 2013, as the Brazilian economy begins to slow, you get Brazil's version of the sort of like movement of the squares, like 2011, 2013 uprisings, which is going to be waged against a hostile, a pretty hostile PT government. Like there's a sort of public show by Dilma Rousseff. They're like, yeah, no, I support the protests when they're not violent and we're going to do stuff. But okay, this goes badly very quickly. So these protests start over these like raises in public in the cost of public transportation, like the fare cost raises in a bunch of cities. And very quickly, there are like 3 million people in the street. The sort of conventional narrative about what happened here is that, so the protests start off leftists, right? But then the leftists get run out as the protests sort of keep going by these sort of like faux apolitical, like conservative nationalists that like take them over and turn them from this sort of like leftist call for like a more egalitarian society and for like the right to the city and like stopping evictions and stuff like that to this sort of like anti-corruption crusade against the PT, against Dilma Rousseff, and against sort of like the left itself. And okay, this is true, like as far as it goes. We'll be talking more about the impeachment campaign like next episode. But there's more going on here. And the more going on here is that in 2013, there were massive protests, like 800,000 people protest the Confederation Cup, which is like a soccer tournament hosted by is one of the things that like precedes the World Cup. I don't know. I'm not a soccer knower, but yeah. And there's these massive protests against them, and they are just unbelievably brutally suppressed. Like 54,000 cops are sent out to like stop this shit, and they beat the absolute shit out of everyone. And to understand why these movements were crushed and how the right was able to take power, we need to talk about the Brazilian police. So I think, you know, most of our listeners, you two, me, like we are familiar with the American police, right? Like if you're listening to the show, odds are decently good. You have seen them beat your friends to a bloody pulp. You have seen them tase the parents of children locked in a building with a mass shooter. You have seen them slaughter men, women, and children in the street for no other reason than they can, because they are a fascist death squad fused with organized crime outfits funded by putting guns to the heads of the American working class. They are descendants of slave catchers working each and every day to keep the American racial hierarchy firmly intact.
You put it that way, it sounds bad, but I don't know. Like, I like Law and Order. So, like the TV show.
Yeah, really? You know, they have good propaganda.
Yeah, you've never watched Law and Order SVU?
Oh, no.
Oh, Garrison. You're missing out on all of the good Law and Order.
Is that the one with the goth chick? in it?
I honestly don't know. There's like 40 different Law and Order shows. It's impossible to keep track of them. But Ding there is dong. That there is that one goth chick that they brought in because our grandparents would think she was hot.
Yeah, I think I'm okay.
The power of goth chicks to extend police budgets.
Yeah, yeah, it's fun and good. And okay, you know, like we know how bad the U.S. police are. I'm going to read this from the L.A. Times, quote, Brazilian cops kill at 9 times the rate of U.S. law enforcement.
Wee.
9 times.
Well, that's pretty bad.
Yeah. It's worth pointing out here that Brazil was the last country in this hemisphere to abolish slavery. Like, they abolished it like 20 years after the fucking U.S. did. Right. And so, you know, when you're thinking about what the Brazilian police is, take everything you know about the American police and understand that the Brazilian police, right? Okay, so with the American police, right, the murder dial goes up to 11. With the Brazilian police, that murder dial goes up to 99, and that's where they've cranked it to. Here's some crime think. In 2014, Brazil's prison population became the third largest in the world, with 570,000 prisoners. There's like 600-something thousand prisoners today, most of whom are black. During the PT administration, this figure increased by 620%.
Cool.
Yeah. This is a part of the PT that people really sort of tiptoe around, which is that they preside over, like, a regime of mass executions and mass incarceration that is, utterly atrocious. And as an aside here, there are probably some of our listeners whose thing is that they want to go into electoral politics. And if you are doing this, you have one job, like solely you have one responsibility, and your job is to fucking annihilate the police. Your job is to destroy them so utterly and completely that their very name is spat as a curse in the street by people who make the sign of cross for protection every time they think about them. Like, by the end of your first term, these people need to be living in fucking hovels in the woods without access to a weapon that even as deadly as a 2x4. And every time they attempt to enter a town, people need to be like chasing them and throwing rocks at them. And if you do not do this, you will live like Lula has, to see literally everything you have ever done crumble beneath the weight of a fascism that is too terrible to imagine, and you will also experience in your lifetime. And instead of doing this, the PT is like, fuck it, no, we're going to use the police to stamp out protest against the mega events that they're putting on. The police repression around the World Cup is like arguably worse than the stuff for the Confederation Cup. In order to prepare for the World Cup, the PT stages this like massive social cleansing campaign. We talked about this a bit in our sports episode. Like, they carry out mass evictions against both like regular people and also against like there's a bunch of sort of leftists and also sort of just like regular people who squat in Brazil, right? Like, a huge part of the social movements have been about sort of seizing property and building stuff on it, seizing abandoned buildings. And yeah, this stuff all gets evicted so they can be replaced with World Cup businesses. It's, you know, like what is happening here is it's like all of the violence and gentrification, but in the span of like a year. Right. The PT are literally rolling German tanks through the favelas because, like, you know, subtlety is something that happens to other people, not like to reality. And, you know, as we talked about before, they're putting them under literally military occupation with colonial troops who were like fighting in Haiti. Right. Evict 250,000 people for this fucking tournament. Here's some other shit they did. This is from a series of pieces by a Brazilian anarchist group called Fictional Faction. In 2012, the federal government and FIFA signed the General Law of the World Cup to ensure that the country would, quote, uphold FIFA standards of organization during the 2013 Confederation Cup and the 2014 World Cup. This agreement constituted an enormous legal offense to the Brazilian people, entailing the suspension of many constitutional rights and norms that were already precarious for most. For example, a court established to rule within 48 hours on strikes that occurred within the World Cup. Workers lost the right to strike or fight for improvements, while FIFA avoided paying taxes on businesses within Brazilian territory. A special secretariat of public security for great events was created, breaking the laws stipulating that justice may not have special sponsors or clients who demand priority. The privatization of public space was legitimized by the creation of, quote, exclusive streets for FIFA and its partners, in which even local businesses were required to keep their doors closed within the exclusion zone around the stadium.
The laws allowed FIFA to intervene directly in the market without the oversight of the state. FIFA was able to stipulate the price to charge for tickets, suspending the usual half price for students and any application of consumer protection code. In addition, more than 20,000 people were allowed to work as unregulated volunteers during the World Cup. These volunteers did not receive the protections of basic labor rights and operated outside of constitutional norms in situations analogous to slavery. According to Brazilian law, these exceptions to safety and labor, to labor and safety law, are supposed to be limited to volunteer work for nonprofit institutions that have a, quote, civic, cultural, education, recreational, or social assistance purposes, which hardly describe FIFA. The state even overlooked the use of child labor in activities related to the game, such as the role of ball boy, which had been banned in Brazil since 2004. So this goes great. And the thing, you know, so this happens in 2014 under Dilma Rousseff, but it's worth noting, like, this is Lula's project from the beginning, right? Like, he has been fighting to get Brazil the World Cup, like, since like the opening for applications to get this World Cup in Brazil to happen. And what, you know, this campaign to get the World Cup takes the form of a literally all out war against leftist protesters, squatters, workers, people living in favelas, people who are literally all of those at the same time, who are, you know, supposed to be the PT's base. And this is what the PT spends literally the rest of its time and power doing, right? Like, Dilma Rousseff implements a bunch of austerity measures, like, the expanding police powers, like, this is the shit that the PT is doing, like, literally as the Grim Reaper is coming to their door. Like, 2 months before Dilma Rousseff is impeached, she passed a pair of anti-terrorism laws targeted at protesters. And okay, we'll go into the impeachment next episode, but I want to close on this, which is preventing this from happening, right? Preventing the Party of Workers from fucking rolling tanks through the streets in fucking working class neighborhoods. Like, this is the actual sort of beating of this is the actual sort of principal politics of anti-capitalism. Like, this is why there is a sort of rigid anarchist opposition to the state, right? This isn't just ideological purity. It is the concrete knowledge that any other path is death, because we literally cannot continue to do as the PT has been doing for the past fucking 20 years to produce our own gravediggers. Literally, the ecosystems we draw our life from will not survive if we keep doing this. It does not matter how many people you lift out of poverty. If you do not actually destroy the class system, capitalism and fascism will force them back into poverty. All of the poverty, like almost all of the poverty gains that Lula gained during his entire time in office, were destroyed in 4 years of Bolsonaro. Every day that the state is allowed to exist, every day the class system is allowed to exist, it creates 1,000 more Bolsonaros. It creates 1,000 Bolsonaros in the police. It creates them in the armies. It creates them in corporations. It creates them on the streets. And they have to be destroyed or this world will fucking burn. And in the next episode, we are going to watch 1,000 Bolsonaros burn the entire country. And that is my incredibly angry response to this absolute fucking bullshit that is the reason, like, are a lot of the reasons why everything is completely fucked.
Cool. Well, everybody, have a happy start of November, and hopefully Brazil isn't in a state of civil war by the time you listen to this episode.
Yeah, I update at the end of the episode. I don't think there's been any change.
And remember, folks, if you somehow take control of the political apparatus in Brazil, dismantle the police and the military. That should be a lesson for you. I know a lot of you are on the verge of taking power in Brazil, so hopefully that message will get out.
Yeah, and I mean, in general, don't fund them. Like, don't give them more money. Don't spend a bunch of money buying them German tanks. Like,
well, okay. Like, why are we focusing on German tanks? They make fine tanks.
Okay, but hear me out here. Can you name a single good thing a German tank has ever been used for?
Yeah.
Defeating the commies, I'm guessing.
Yeah, there's some communists, probably. I don't know.
Anyway.
They killed a lot of Englishmen. Anyway. And Canadians.
It Could Happen Here is a production of Cool Zone Media. For more podcasts from Cool Zone Media, visit our website, coolzonemedia.com, or check us out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find sources for It Could Happen Here updated monthly at coolzonemedia.com/sources. Thanks for listening.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer-founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.